Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Thursday afternoon. Joining me from Boston, Massachusetts is Tim Von Temps.
Howdy, everybody.
And joining me from Dallas, Texas is Band McMahon.
Howdy, partners. And that's a trademark on howdy, okay? You don't say howdy in Boston. The hell you
I'm
think
not from,
you,
I'm not what, from here, so.
You don't say howdy in upstate New York. Do not be infringing on my howdy trademark. Damn
you
it.
You definitely do say howdy up there.
Farm country. Right, well, he still spent more time in New England than you, Von Temps. Just want to point that out.
That is true. That is true.
All right, so we're a week into the NBA season, a little over a week in the NBA season. Seen quite a bit. I can't believe it, but I've already been in five NBA arenas already this year. It's crazy. It's terrific. I'm pleased about it a lot. So still too early to really form any ironclad beliefs, of course. But there's some stuff going on that I want your guys' opinion on about whether this is something to pay attention to or just a little blip. And I want to start with James Harden and his dramatic fall off in scoring. Now, he has only played five games, so let's just keep that in mind. But he is only averaging 16 and a half points a game. Obviously, if you've been paying attention at all to the league, you've seen that his free throw numbers have crashed. He was only getting to the line three times a game, and he's the poster boy for the new rules. I talked about this on my pod a little bit earlier this week. But I want to know, you know him well, McMahon. I went back. I was pretty sure he said this. So I went back actually today and listened because I was at Nets Media Day. Mm-hmm. And he said his hamstring was 100%. But then he said yesterday that he's still getting into form, because he was obviously recovering as opposed to training in the offseason. Although I remember hearing plenty of, he's going to be much better this year than he was last year sort of stuff. He is pointing toward form, and I'm sure that that's true. But what do you make of his by the way, the Nets, who last year were the number one offensive team of all time. And they only had seven games with their big three together. So it wasn't just based on that. When they had two of the three throughout the season, they were dominant too. So we're talking about still a juggernaut offensively. Mm-hmm. Right now, coming into tonight's games, and I know you're going to see swings. Right now, they're 21st in offense, five games in.
They're actually, according to NBA.com's offensive rating, they're tied for 27th with the juggernaut offensive team that is the Oklahoma City Thunder.
You are right. I had that number confused. It's 27.
Thank goodness Bazley dunked there to pad that offensive rating. There. By the way, Russell Westbrook, the NBA's guide for stat padding etiquette. I love it. Give me a freaking break.
Right. Thank you. He had a quadruple double Wednesday night, if I'm not mistaken.
That's
he had
correct.
A quadruple double, and he also should get almost a quintuple double because you can't have more than two technicals. So if you get two technicals, that should, that you filled up that column as well.
It was the complete Russell Westbrook experience.
Our ace producer, Andrea Pelkey, asked me if that was a quadruple. Our ace producer, Andrea Pelkey, at the Celtics game last night asked me if that was a quadruple double. And I said, Russ has had plenty of those in his career.
There have been 16 in NBA history. He has six of them.
Yes.
Wow. That's a great stat. Oh, my God. Wow.
But let's get back to that other Rockets, former Rockets guard, James Harden. Yes. And, obviously there's this huge spotlight on the rules changes and the impact on him. And, that's not nothing, but that is not what would be concerning to me if I'm a Nets fan, a Nets, coach, front office guy. And look, when Harden, it's an excuse when he's talking about he wasn't able to train, wasn't able to play pickup all offseason. He was rehabbing, but it's a reason. It's legitimate. Now, so to me, you look at Harden, the fact that he's not getting to the line hardly at all, a little bit of that is the rules changes. A lot of that is he does not have any burst. He's not getting to the rim at all. You look at typical James Harden, he would get you know, in that restricted area, he'd get 5, 6, 7 attempts per game. That's down. He's had 18 in 5 games. That to me is a much bigger concern. He looks a little heavy. He lacks burst. And look, when you talk about like teams who are considering, do they throw the whole farm at the Rockets last year for Harden? Let's be straight up. There are plenty of teams that were interested, but one of the significant concerns about Harden was how will he age? How will he age with that body type? And how will he age with that lifestyle? I'm not saying he's, I don't know if he's, flying to Vegas on off days still, or, I don't know how he's, I'm just saying you do that kind of stuff for 10, 12 years, it tends to catch up to you. And I think he's dealing with a little bit of that. If Harden is going to get back to being, the all NBA force that obviously he's been forever and that the Nets need him to be, he's going to have to be extremely disciplined, much more so than he ever has been.
Well, certainly that is true. And I do think when you watch him play, Nate Duncan, who I know listened to this pod at some point, he's a fan of the pod. He has said that Harden has become a caricature of himself in both his style of play and his attempt to draw fouls. And when you're watching these games, like I watched the Heat Nets game from Wednesday night earlier today before the pod, and it's true. Like there are 4 or 5 plays in that game where James Harden had to step on somebody and just try to draw a foul instead of going to the rim. Like one time he had Bam Adebayo beat, he had him on his hip, and rather than just going to the rim for a layup, he tried to jump into Bam and like fling the ball in the air for a turnover. Another time he had an open path to the rim and he tried to draw a foul and flung the ball out of bounds. Like I think he's totally in his head about these foul rules, in part because he has really built himself into this player that either draws a foul or takes a step back three after a bunch of dribbles. Right. So sometimes even when he has the ball open, he kind of dribbles around a bit before he shoots it, 'cause he like gets in this thing where he's got to dribble the ball first. So I think that's some of it. He's talked a bunch about how the hamstring injury kind of limited his offseason work and he feels rusty. I'm sure that's part of it too. And the other thing is just the Nets in general, being around them some over the past couple weeks, they're sort of just acting like this is the preseason still. They're playing some wild lineups that they're not going to play in games that matter. Yesterday, there was at one point when they had both Harden and Durant off the court and they had this all bench lineup out there with Joe Harris as the one guy who could score. Nobody could really create. So I don't think there's a lot to really read into long term with them. I think they're ultimately going to be fine. But I do wonder, if you take 3 or 4 free throws a game off James Harden's tally, and you look at him maybe losing another step as he gets a little older in his career, he certainly isn't guarding anybody still. It will be interesting to see, is he a guy that's still a top 5 to 10 player in the league, or is he a guy that's a top 25 player in the league or top 20 player in the league? And if he's that guy instead of an MVP candidate, well, all of a sudden, whether the Kyrie Irving situation resolves itself or not, that's not the Nets team everybody thought was coming into the season, right? That was Kevin Durant, maybe the best player in the league. James Harden, one of the 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 best players in the league, and then a collection of role players around him. If it's Kevin Durant and a guy who's, a borderline All-NBA player instead of a consensus top 5 to 10 guy, then I think you start to wonder, is the net ceiling a little different than we thought?
I still love his skill set as a player. I do think McMahon is right that part of the reason why he gets the line so much is because he can get the drop on guys. Everybody goes freaking crazy when he would shoot a 3 and, he would wear, giant padding on his lower half. And to avoid spraining his ankle, he would essentially plan to land on his backside and he would get fouled all the time. That definitely was a source of a lot of his free throws, but also he would get by guys on the perimeter and those guys would be chasing him. And then he would put his hands out and throw his hands into those guys to get fouls, which he got because he was so good off the dribble to get to the basket. And so if he's not able to get that corner turned, that's going to be an issue. But I do think he's just got to rewire because like I was watching him last night and there were times where he was in transition, where he was going 1-on-3. He didn't have numbers. And his reaction to that was to try to fling himself into somebody to get a foul. Mm-hmm. No, when you're 1-on-3, you hold it up. you know, I guess if you're Giannis, you take you know, you take three steps from the foul line or from the 3-point line and you just dunk it. It doesn't matter how many people are there, but you know, when you're 1-on-3, you pull up. But he is so wired to force that action that, you know, now the officials, now that they're just flat out brazen, you know, in the past they had to whistle it, even though they probably didn't like it. The rules are the rules and they called the foul. Now they're like, we're definitely not giving this to you now. Almost, you know, it's an opportunity to sort of to get even on him.
Which by the way, has made the gameplay way better. Like the games have been awesome overall this first week from a flow standpoint, because there's just a lot less of these fouls being called.
Also,
and I think the games
are
a lot better
game
as a result.
No late game reviews.
Yes, that has also been a massive change in a positive direction. The review changes on that. That's been huge. Yeah.
So I am still wagering on Harden rounding into form, it just being early. But the way he looks is definitely something that's a yellow flag. Not an orange flag yet, not a red flag, but it's a yellow flag. And I think that's a fair way to look at it.
Well, and the other thing about the Nets, too, is that they only have Harden, Durant, and Patty Mills right now who could create a shot. Like the rest of their guys are pretty much either catch-and-shoot guys like Joe Harris or, you know, Blake at this point, or they're just not offensive players, guys like Bruce Brown or Javon Carter or Nick Claxton. You know, he's kind of just a finisher at the rim, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't have... There's not a lot of ways for them to get easy baskets if it's not Harden or Durant doing it themselves for other guys or Patty Mills kind of breaking down the defense off the dribble. So I think that's part of it too. And that is where maybe they, like Durant has alluded to, maybe they felt Kyrie a little more being out a little more than they expected, because there aren't a lot of guys on that team who can generate shots. And I think that's made their offense bog down a little more than they would have guessed.
Right, but if you have the Harden who can get, you know, 30 points and 10 assists in his sleep, it's you know, it doesn't matter.
Yep.
That Harden, you know, maybe we see that guy in 2 or 3 weeks after he's able to, you know, get back in shape and get a little bit of rhythm. But they need him. And you know, the other thing, like Blake was pretty damn good, and Blake does, when Blake is good, he was pretty damn good for him last year. When he's good, you know, he's not a primary shot creator, but he has some shot creating ability. Blake looks creaky. He looks like a guy who drives a Kia, not a guy who jumps over a Kia.
Meanwhile, Spencer Dinwiddie, the guy who they, you know, signed and traded, which look, I they didn't want to pay him. They got a lot of money on this roster. I'm just saying, coming off of a partial ACL tear, he's averaging 20 points. He's yet to miss a free throw. He's something like, let me see what he is from the line. He hasn't missed a free throw in months. He's 13 of 13 from the line to start the season. They play tonight. So now I've just jinxed him. The Wizards are 3-1. You saw
13 of 13. That used to be a quarter for Harden.
Right. You're not even kidding. He's shooting 53% effective field goal percentage, 50% on threes. I know you saw the Wizards Wednesday night, Bontemps. They won in Boston. Beal didn't even play that well.
Nope.
In fact, Beal hasn't played that well so far this year, quite frankly. Wizards are 3-1. What do we feel about that?
I think the Wizards are good. I think they're a legitimately good team. And, you know, Wes Unseld Jr., new coach there. Obviously, his dad has a ton of history with the Wizards. / Bullets. Also should say, you know, he was pretty shook up before the game yesterday. Brian wrote a bit about Bob Ferry passing away, Danny Ferry's dad. He was the GM of the team when Wes Unseld was a player there. But he has done a remarkable job early on with this team. And I got to say, you know, McMahon mentioned Russell Westbrook before. If you're the Wizards, they turned Russell Westbrook in that trade into Spencer Dinwiddie, Montrezl Harrell, Kyle Kuzma, and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. And now look, if you're trying to win a championship, you probably don't want to be playing guys like Montrezl Harrell a lot of minutes. But as we've seen in the
past, problematic
those,
since the last 2 years he's been on championship contenders.
Well, that's true. But when you saw a couple of years ago when the Clippers were the sixth seed and won 45 games, right? And even last year, you know, 2 years ago when he won the Sixth Man of the Year award with the Clippers, he is a dominant force at times in the regular season. He had 25-12 in that game last night. Power them to a win after Daniel Gafford especially got hurt at the beginning.
He's averaging 18 points, 9 rebounds. he was always a hot, he was always a guy, one of the highest field goal percentages in the league, but he's shooting 68% from the field. He is back to that Clippers.
Yeah. He's been
pre-Kawhi numbers.
Absolutely. He's playing great. And they just have a lot of bodies, like quality NBA rotation players. Obviously Bradley Beal's their best player. He hasn't even played that great yet, but Spencer Dinwiddie at this point to me is probably better than Russell Westbrook in a vacuum. And you add in these other players.
He's
going to
put up more
efficient
numbers than Westbrook is in terms of shooting from range, shooting from the line, turnovers ratio. He's going to be more efficient than him probably.
Yeah. And I just think when you look at this team overall, they've got 10 or 11 NBA rotation players on their team. And if you're trying to get, like, the Wizards want to try to take a step and get, you know, be a top six team in the East this year, which a lot of teams do, it's going to be hard to do that. I think they've got a real shot to do it with this group. I think they're going to be hard to play every night. They play pretty fast. They've held up on defense okay. Their bench is really good. You know, I was really impressed by them, and they've gotten off to a pretty good start, and I'm curious to see if they can keep it going.
So small sample size here, a handful of games. Kyle Kuzma has averaged 5 rebounds a game in his career. You know, never been his MO. They always want him, you know, Luke Walton wanted him to run and all this stuff. He's averaging 12 rebounds a game.
Yep.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, hoodie teenagers, barrel sinking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Like, hello, when did Kyle Kuzma become a rebound getter?
Get him away from Hollywood, and he's got some toughness to him now.
Uh-huh, I see. So the Wizards, one of the teams off to a good start. Another team off to a good start who had a great win for them. I mean, we have to count it as a great win for them. Wednesday night in Milwaukee, the Minnesota Timberwolves off to a great start, 3-1, one in Milwaukee. Timberwolves have been a horrific defensive team. I know the one thing you look at when you see the Wolves, Anthony Edwards puts up, you know, numbers, not always efficient, but puts up numbers. Obviously Cat puts up numbers in this game. D'Angelo Russell put up numbers, and that's what you look at. But this has been a horrible defensive team. They've been bottom five in defense, most of the last couple of years. And Karl Towns has been an extraordinary disappointment defensively from early on in his career, where he showed like he could really have be a terrific, versatile defender. They are playing, at least in the early going here, excellent defense. They come into today, number 2 in the league in defensive efficiency. Chris Finch, who came in the middle of last year, changed some of their schemes. And so far, the players are buying in on it, and they're being way more aggressive, because when they looked at their roster, they said, you know, we don't have tremendously talented defensive players, but there's a lot of athleticism. So they are one of these teams that is trying to jump into passing lanes, trying to create turnovers, defense to offense, and in a very small sample size. And look, this team has been horrible for 15 years. Mm-hmm. So small sample size doesn't mean nothing, McMahon. They are actually causing turnovers and getting things done. And so I'm not saying they're going to make the playoffs in the West, but I'm saying here we are. Let's acknowledge that the Timberwolves are doing positive things at the start of the season.
I think they're definitely an interesting team. And, you know, the one guy they have that I think can be a really disruptive defender is Josh Okogie. You know, the question is, can he, you know, not muck up the offense enough to where you can play him significant minutes? You know, Edwards is going to be a star. Karl Anthony Towns, I like where he is in his career, and we've talked about this before, where he kind of is at the point where he realizes his rep is as a guy who's put up big numbers but hasn't won anything. And, you know, he definitely is determined to, you know, prove that he can win in the league. I can't believe in a team that's starting D'Angelo Russell at point guard. I'm sorry. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I can't. Anthony Edwards is a blast, but I just, you know,
best quote in the league too.
Yeah.
But what did he say last night, Bontemps? What was this thing about Giannis? I can't remember now.
Go ahead, man.
Instead of, well, he turned a 12 letter cuss word into an 8 letter cuss word. and 7-2-2. It basically said, you can't. Yeah, you know, he basically, like, the guy's 7'2", 280. He's an absolute freak. You're not going to stop him scoring, but he said a much more colorful phrase.
He's neither 7'2 or 280, but I know how it felt like. You
try to keep him from getting to the rim. You think he's 7'2", 280 also.
Right.
But, you know, I could see the Wolves being in that play-in mix. I think they've got a chance.
That's the question, right? Like, when you talk about believing in them, I'm with you, but, man, like, I don't believe in them as a real team, like, to do damage with D'Angelo Russell as their point guard. But the question is, can they finish 10th, right? That's all they're trying to do. Can they finish 10th? And their competition is,
it would be amazing.
The Spurs,
if they finish 10th, they would have a parade.
Right. They're competing with the Spurs, the Kings, and the Pelicans to finish 10th. I think they should feel pretty good as of today about their chances of beating out those teams to finish 10th. And if they do, to Brian's point, they're going to be thrilled.
Yeah,
that's what their season's about.
I will say that the Kings have shown a pulse. I think there's as this is damning with faint praise. There is as much legitimate reason for optimism in Sacramento as there's been in a decade or so.
Well, and that's another team that if they finish 10th, they're going to be throwing a parade. Like, both those teams just want to be in the play-in tournament. If they're in the play-in tournament for game 83, they're going to be thrilled. So, you know, and that, to me right now, I'm with you. Those are the two teams I think have the inside track on that 10th spot. I don't think the Spurs are that good. And the Pelicans, as we know, with the Zion situation, are just a dumpster fire. So, it's hard to see them being there.
Well, I tell you what, I'm optimistic about OKC after watching last night.
All right, we'll get to that later. The Anthony Edwards is taking 10 threes a game so far, and he's making 37%, way too early to really take any into that. But I'm just going to say, they obviously want him to chuck him because he's shooting 10 a game. You know, I always go back to one of my favorite quotes of all time from World Be Free, who was a legendary chucker in the 80s. And he said, it's hard to average 20 in the NBA. And the reporter said, points? No, shots.
But you know what? That's a legitimate point. And like Anthony Edwards, he's a guy who I think for the next couple of years, you shouldn't really worry about his efficiency because he's going to develop into one of the great scorers in the league. And so I think the next couple of years, you know, he should be kind of trying to test his limits and stretch his limits and, you know, figure things out. And there might be some, you know, 5 for 23s in there. And that's all right.
He is taking,
well, by the way, he's shooting
3 shots a night.
Well, listen, he's shooting 10 threes a game at 36% clip. That's fine. I mean,
obviously you'd like
him to shoot better, but if he's hitting 36% of his threes, that's fine. Right. Like, that's more than
I know
good.
It's early, but man, that's,
and let me tell you, when he gets downhill, I mean, that is a linebacker who can fly.
I mean, since the second half of last season, he's really taken off. I mean, he's a really exciting piece. And with him in Towns, and I'll tell you what, Chris Finch, like you said, Brian, I mean, Chris Finch is a guy like Nick Nurse, spent a long time overseas, you know, spent a long time in the G League. That guy knows how to coach. And like that team, you know, they're going to be ready to go. I think they're, you know, they've got a chance to do what they want to do this year, which would be a real step forward for them.
Okay. Another team worth keeping an eye on. That just won in Denver and against the Clippers.
And beat Atlanta.
And beat Atlanta at home before starting this West Coast trip. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductions are actually in Cleveland this year. You know, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is in Cleveland, but they only have the inductions there like once every 5 years or something like that. I don't know, once every 3-4 years.
Well, that's because what Joakim Noah said. Who wants to go to Cleveland? You ever heard anybody plan a vacation in Cleveland?
Congrats to Joakim, who's having his is not his number retired, like he's being honored.
No, he's become a Bulls ambassador doing Joakim Noah tonight.
The standard to get your number retired in Chicago is somewhat high when you see those guys are up there. Shout out to Joakim Noah.
I will say this, Joakim Noah's ambassador party, I guarantee you, will be enjoyable.
They had a big shindig last night for him. Everybody was back in town for it. So yeah, should be a fun night tonight. Knicks and the Bulls and the old Knicks head to head.
Tibbs is in town for Joe Noah, who he wore him right down to the nub. I'm sorry to say, but those were great years. I covered so many of those Bulls teams trying to beat LeBron, and they never could. But I really always enjoyed covering Joe Noah. But anyway, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductions are in Cleveland, and they're at the arena. So that means the Cavs have got to go on. I think they're the first team to make a big coastal road trip from one conference to the other. And the Cavs are out west in the first week of the season. They have started on like a 5-game West Coast trip. And they are 3-2. And they have not shown this much life since LeBron left. I know we're only talking about 5 games. And what I mean by life, they actually were playing halfway decent last season. And then they made the Jared Allen trade, which they had to make.
Yeah.
But they just weren't the same team after that. Kind of derailed them. But I say
5-game overreaction, Jared Allen's the best player in that deal.
Right. When they were playing that way, when you looked at them, it wasn't, you know, wasn't really sustainable. When you look at what they're doing now, they're doing something very interesting. They are playing super big. And I mean super big.
Munchkins in the backcourt and then 7-footers everywhere else.
That's right. I don't know if Jared Allen is really a 7-footer, but whatever, you're right.
With his fro, he's about 7'9".
it's a beautiful piece of hair. By the way, Jared Allen, who signed a $100 million contract in the offseason, he's shooting 75% from the field.
And not just on dunks. Like he's knocking down some junk. I saw him knock down a little Dirk one legger that it might have been last night or the other night. Showing nice touch around, and obviously, you know, he's going to be able to finish, but like he's shown some pretty significant offensive development.
He's a nice player.
So they did the deal for Lauri Markkanen, which not many people understood. It didn't look like it was going to fit. There was some question about whether they could even play Jared Allen and Evan Mobley together. And not only are they playing them together, they're starting Markkanen at the three,
which is not going to work long term. Let's just say that now. It's not going to work.
I agree. And I don't even know if this team is going to continue to play this way long term. But having said that, what we have seen and the reason that by the way, they held the Clippers to 79 points Wednesday night. Now, bad nights happen. Clippers had an off night, whatever. You don't see many games in the NBA in 2021 where a team doesn't crack 80, especially on their home court. And I'm going to tell you why. Because Evan Mobley is looking like a defensive wunderkind.
Oh, he's unbelievable.
So this is from Micah Adams, who used to work with us at ESPN, but always has terrific stats. He is contesting 18.4 shots per game, far and away the most in the NBA. He's contesting 7.2 threes per game. He is absolutely defending 1 through 5. He is switching everywhere.
Sometimes all at the same time.
And I was talking to some people with the Cavs, and you know, he played in summer league after getting drafted third, and he did not fare well in summer league. And when you looked at him, even when he was drafted, you could tell he was a lightweight. You know, he's 19 years old, and you know, he's going to need some time. So he really was upset with the way he played in summer league. And so he asked the Cavs to do extra work. They sent one of their development guys, Derek Millender, out to LA where he was living in the offseason. And they worked out every day. Now, obviously, it's not unusual for an NBA player to work out every day. It's not like this is unheard of. But he really wanted to focus on strength work. And so he's added strength between summer league and now. And his will defensively is on another level. Now, this is what the Cavs are saying internally. They believe that he is talented enough and playing strong enough that he could compete to be on one of the all defensive teams as a rookie. This is an unheard of.
But there's two of them. Davion Mitchell too in Sacramento. Right. There's two legit. Right. I mean, obviously very early, but two right. guys in this rookie class who I think could legitimately contend for all defensive honors this year.
Yes. So. And Evan Mobley, and you know, Sexton is having some games and you know, he's doing that, but you know, they, Isaac Okoro, who they drafted last year, who they like, they put him on the bench.
He's the only wing on the entire roster.
I know it's still not a balanced roster. And I agree with Bontemps. This is going to catch up with them.
You haven't talked about the one guy that's really driven a lot of this to me, even more than Evan Mobley, is Ricky Rubio.
Yeah. So they traded for Rubio. They, in the Larry Nance trade, that was a different trade. What did they send for Rubio? I forget now.
Torian Prince was traded to Minnesota to save Minnesota money, I believe was the reason for that.
That's right.
Cause they were up against the tax and they also, so they sent Rubio to Cleveland.
Without getting too far over my skis and getting aggregated too much, Ricky Rubio, from what I understand, was not thrilled about being traded to Cleveland. And at his point in his career, I don't really blame him. And
well,
I think
also, it was like the 14th time he was traded in the last 2 years.
Right. I think he was going to be playing alongside Devin Booker in Phoenix. Next thing you know, he's in Cleveland. Okay. So it took some convincing to get Rubio sold on. This was the best place for him. And so, but whatever they did, they got Rubio focused and he is providing very level-headed, competent ball handling and execution, which considering the last couple of years, they've played with very young and sometimes very wild guards. Putting Rubio out there makes a difference. Now, again, I don't know, Bontemps, whether this is going to last very long in Cleveland, but if nothing else, the guy they gave $100 million to looks like he can play alongside the number three overall pick, at least for now. And the number three overall pick looks like a potential dominating defensive player for a long time. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by.
Yeah, I mean, look, the team isn't going to be very good, right? I mean, Larry Markin is playing the three. That's a disaster. Like McMahon said, they have no wings on the team other than Isaac Okoro. He might legitimately be the only wing on the team, and he's kind of an undersized wing himself, right? So they are going to have problems as the year goes along. But all that really matters for the Cavs is after years and years of drafting guys and having, mediocre to decent players, Colin Sexton, Darius Garland, Isaac Okoro, all fine players. Evan Mobley looks like a guy who's going to be a franchise centerpiece, which the Cavs desperately needed. And you look at these teams at the top of the draft this year. I know Cade Cunningham hasn't played yet, but Jalen Green goes to Houston. They jump up. They get a guy who looks like he could be a franchise centerpiece. Mobley looks like a franchise centerpiece. Scottie Barnes looks like a franchise centerpiece. Jalen Suggs has been off to a bit of a slow start. I think he's going to be really good. Josh Giddey looks really good. The top of this draft has looked really, really good so far. And that's even before you get the guys like Davion Mitchell and some of these guys farther down that look good. But, you know, look, Rubio's played great. I think through a week, he's been the sixth man of the year. He has really powered them in these wins.
The Cavs got an all the defensive player and sixth man of the year.
Well, look,
okay, let's just get to him now. it's sixth man of the week. Okay.
Well, I'm just saying. Let's not do it. But through the first five games, he has been a hugely impactful guy off the bench for them. Like having a point guard of his caliber coming off the bench and playing 30 minutes a game is a huge benefit to a team, especially like you said, a young team like this that has not always looked organized in recent years. So I think, again, for a Cavs team that's trying to climb back up the mountain and wants some positive momentum in the right direction, Mobley alone is enough for them. If they were 0-5 and Mobley was playing like this, they'd have reason to be excited. You combine that with winning some games like this early and Garland looking pretty, you know, looking decent when he's playing and, you know, the everything coming together the way it has so far, it's not going to sustain itself, but there's a lot to be excited about. I think if you're a Cavs fan for a change,
they have interesting pieces. You know, I would be surprised if they can contend for a play-in spot this year. Maybe they'll prove me wrong, but
the East is just too deep.
Yeah. I'd be very surprised at that. And so, you know, I think you've got to figure out, and these are long-term questions, although this first one you got to figure out this year, is Sexton Garland, is that Sexland backcourt something you want to move forward with? Or, you know, do you need to explore probably sign and trade possibilities for Sexton this summer? And then, you know, this over the next, you know, 2 or 3 years, they need to figure out, is Allen Mobley, is that a tandem that you can be a good team with? And, you know, defensively, it's funny. You know, there's so many concerns about playing the small backcourt defensively. Well, the answer is have two guys who can, you know, cover the entire court just by linking arms and are both mobile and athletic. Those guys, they are a beast duo defensively, but offensively, it's, you know, it's dicey. Even, you know, I was talking about Allen improvements. Neither one of those guys can shoot a three. And so for Mobley, he's either going to, and maybe it ends up being both. I mean, I wouldn't rule this out, but he's either going to have to develop into a legitimate, you know, stretch threat, a guy who can, you know, be a threat shooting threes, or he's going to have to play the five primarily. You know, maybe he's a guy who plays the five primarily and bombs away from threes. And
yeah, I mean, I think that's the way he truly is a franchise. I mean, the way he becomes the true franchise centerpiece he's got a chance to be is if he's a five who can do that too, right?
Yeah,
that's the idealized version of him where if it all comes together, that's what it looks like. But to your point, he's got to put on a lot of muscle before he can do that. Cause right now he's just not strong enough to play the five anyway, which is why it's good.
Right.
They've got Jaren Allen next to him. He could develop as a four, play next to him. It's kind of from a developmental standpoint, it's as good of a situation as they could hope for.
Yeah. And if they decide he needs to be a five primarily, I think Jared Allen will have, you know, it's not like he'll be hard to move in the trade market.
No,
but again,
$20 million on a flat deal and the cap eventually going up the way it is going to look fine as it goes along.
Yeah, but that's 2 or 3 years down the road. This year is, you know, excitement about Mobley, and if they're competitive, that's a bonus.
All right, so another team, this team I think might have more staying power than some of these teams we've been talking about. Maybe not. That's the Charlotte Hornets. Mm. 4-1 out of the gate.
One overtime loss to the Celtics from 5-0.
Terry Rozier's not even played. He played a game, maybe.
Yeah,
he's played one or two games, and PJ Washington's been banged up too.
I think they win that game against Boston. He is a crunch time, proven crunch time player. I think they
won
that game. Oh, absolutely. Cajones.
The Celtics are missing couple guys too. Horford didn't play that game. So, I mean, it's a toss up either way, but still, I mean, they're an overtime game away from 5-0.
Listen, I think we should say what everybody is already thinking. This is the Mason Plumlee effect. I think we can all just chalk it up to that.
You know, the problem is they, you know, you look at their rotation, you could say they don't have a backup center, but they do. He just has to start and play a bunch of minutes. And that's Mason Plumlee.
Well, they've been playing when he's been healthy. They've played PJ Washington at center and it's been good. And the thing about Mason Plumlee, like you can joke about it, but their center position has been so bad the past couple of years.
Oh, he's an upgrade for sure.
He's a massive upgrade on what they had before. Like him and PJ Washington at the center spot is fine. I mean, it's not a huge like home run swing move, but they basically got Mason Plumlee for free on draft night. And, you know, he's a solid starting center, and you have PJ Washington playing behind him as a small ball five.
Okay,
that's more than good enough.
But if we're talking about the Hornets, you know, there was obviously buzz, pun intended, about the Hornets going into going into the season because, I mean, you didn't have to. I think Wendy was the last one to realize this, but LaMelo Ball has superstar potential. I think Wendy finally, you know, was there.
Hey, are you guys watching Tyler Hero? We haven't even got to that.
Well, you know what's funny? What's funny about that is that he hasn't even been the story of their season so far.
Well, what's funny is I was about to finish my sentence and say, who the hell knew Miles Bridges had superstar potential?
There you go. I set you up.
You know, I mean, this guy has made the leap, another pun intended. But, I mean, you know, Miles Bridges, like you knew, okay, he shot it well last year. Obviously, he jumps out of the gym. I didn't know he had this kind of ability to make things happen off the dribble. And so, and look, it takes more than a week to declare that this guy is, you know, potential all-star. But, man, that's two really fun young pieces to build around. And Melo, you know, there are still times where he's I would say not exactly attentive defensively. There are still times when the shot selection I don't think is necessarily what the coaches want to see or his team. There was one last night, like 10 minutes left in the game, and they had to squeak one out against the Magic last night. Let's not act like they're just, you know, a juggernaut right now. But it was like 10 minutes left in the game, and kind of semi-transition, he just jacked one up from, you know, 30 feet away, and Miles Bridges was standing underneath the basket, just threw his arms up like, dude, so there's still some of that, but I mean, that's two really exciting young players to build around.
Well, and you mentioned that game last night. So he played 24 minutes in that game against the Magic. He got benched down the stretch for Ish Smith. In the game against the Celtics, Ime Udoka after the game was just like, yeah, we were hunting him on defense, trying to get him involved in some actions to go at him. So, I mean, it's not like he's been playing out of his mind in their 4-1. Like you said, the guy that's driven this is Miles Bridges at 31 last night, and he looks like a totally different player. Like ever since LaMelo showed up last year they had amazing synergy right away. And LaMelo throwing him lobs down court, it's a really good fit. But for Miles to come back and be doing this stuff with his athleticism, like he has turned himself into a different level of player. And if this sustains and he can keep doing this, like that really, to me, fundamentally changes their ceiling. If he goes from just being a complimentary guy to a guy that's a true building block next to him, like all of a sudden, I think you got to look at the Hornets a lot differently if he can keep this up.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's doubled his shots per game. He's gone from 9 shots a game to 18. He's still shooting 40% from 3 on almost double the threes per game. He's gone from 4 to 8 and jumped from 13 points a game to 26, doubled his scoring. When he was in negotiations for his extension within a couple of weeks ago, I am told that the Hornets' baseline offer was 4 years, $60 million, which was 15 a year. And if you look at what Mikal Bridges, which we've compared him to during his career, got, which was some people in the league feel that was an overpay. I think
he'd have gotten it from somebody next summer.
Yeah. You know, obviously once that deal is signed, he cannot sign for $30 million less. We could debate about where they were, but now you look at this guy and, you know, again, we're a week in, but he's playing this kind of level unsigned, headed for unrestricted free agency.
No restriction. You said unrestricted.
You're correct. I am wrong. Yeah. Restricted free agency. You know,
I would say he was pretty smart to turn down 4 years, 60. I think he's going to make a hell of a lot more than that.
Yeah. I mean, there are very few people in the league, if any, who would have given him the same money as Mikal Bridges or thought he was the same player as Mikal Bridges 10 days
ago. But once Mikal Bridges signs for 90, you can't sign for 60.
No, I'm not. So. Yeah. No, for sure. I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying, to your point, even 10 days ago, people would have said Mikal Bridges was a better player. And if Miles Bridges keeps this up for the entire season, that will flip. Like that's look,
that,
how much
that,
of a
that
leap
was Charlotte's
he's
base. That was Charlotte's baseline offer. They may have come up, but they were never really close. After, you know, they were so far apart They weren't there.
The point is, if he kept playing like this and he'd signed that contract, that would have immediately become one of the best contracts in the league. So,
yeah, and so look, I think it's a little much to think, okay, this guy is going to average a really efficient 26 and sure. 8. But if he's a, if he's a bona fide, like solid number two scorer.
Yeah, if he's scoring 20, if he's scoring 20 a game and shooting 38% from three with his athleticism, that's a big time player.
Yeah, especially if, Hayward stays healthy. And then if Rozier can come back, like suddenly you're looking and saying, man, that is a pretty potent lineup.
When you run PJ Washington as a five with that group, you play end of games. Like they're all, LaMelo is 6'7". Rozier's the smallest guy out there at 6'3 or 6'4. They're all athletic. They can run around like that. That's a pretty fun, interesting, late game lineup you can go to too.
So very quietly last year, how many 50, 40, 90 players have there been in league history? A dozen?
Under 20. I'll look up the exact number while you're talking.
Last year he was 50.3% from the field, 40% from three, 87% from the line. So if you're James Borrego and the Hornets, you're like, maybe a guy who does things that efficiency should get a little bit higher usage and see if he can handle it. And that is what has happened so far.
And again, small sample size, his usage has soared and his efficiency is actually better.
Yeah. Like he's over 90% from the line so far,
And he's right there at 40%, 39.5 from three, but he's shooting 62.3% on twos, and they're not all lobs. Now he's going to catch his fair share of those, but a lot of these are him attacking off the dribble.
The last thing we wanted to say, I don't even know if this fits into our theme, but it was just too good, and I just had to hear what McMahon said about it, is the Dallas Mavericks Leadership Council.
Well, and convincing Jay Kidd to play every guy in the season opener. And so, listen, my daughter's, she's got tryouts for seventh grade basketball, first year of school basketball. I've got tryouts next week, and this is something I'm going to go to her coaches with and suggest.
Serious question, McMahon. Why did the players insist on everyone playing in that game?
The honest answer is because the culture there was so bad in recent years that, it's kumbaya. Okay, that they're trying to have as much of a kumbaya vibe as possible. And that's like as much as like the jokes are going to fly and Jim Boylan got a lot of play this week on Twitter and all that kind of stuff. Like, I get what Jay Kidd's trying to do. Your stars, the franchise player, the guy you hope is a star, and the rest of the locker room really felt disconnected from the previous head coach. Rick Carlisle is a brilliant X's and O's guy whose people skills in the 60s remain a work in progress.
Say what the leadership council is first, because this has been going on for the NBA for decades.
Yeah, but it's basically three guys, Luka, Porzingis, and Hardaway, who occasionally meet with Jay Kidd just to discuss. And you look at Jay Kidd's recent history, or his only history as a head coach. He flamed out pretty quickly in two spots and was known as a dictator. So he needs to change that, especially like you don't come in. It's one thing to be a dictator when you're take over a rebuilding situation in Milwaukee like you did. It's another thing when you've got an established MVP candidate on the roster. Like, that wasn't going to fly. You had to be, anti-Rick in terms of personality. So he's trying to be, rah-rah and fun and great vibes. It's funny, and I understand it. I get what he's trying to do. And essentially, if Luka likes it, then it's a good idea. Luka likes it. He's
okay. That's say no more.
Yeah. And look, when Luka signed his Supermax and, they fly everybody over to Slovenia and hold the press conference there, he's asked like,
He was with the Slovenian national team. That's why.
No. This was the press conference was after that, all that. He waited till after the Olympics.
Oh,
Yeah. Because he wanted to just focus on Slovenian national team. This was, they flew everybody over there, hold a big press conference, big celebration. And, I don't remember the exact question, but he basically says, hey, that Slovenian national team, man, the chemistry on that team is so great. That's the one thing I wish we had in Dallas. So, It's going to, and listen, if you can get, they've got Luka and KP at least on the same page. You know, they're liking each other's Instagram posts. They're even posting pictures of each other now. And, you know, they're trying to make things work. They're like, seriously, it got to the point last year.
That's
where
a classic first month of the season thing. You know,
it totally is. Honest. But if you get them in the same room, and you know, I mean, you get them on the
same page.
It's
an admirable attempt to try to reset the reset what was an ugly situation.
Right. Now, you know, the leadership council also lobbied for Dwight Powell to be in the starting lineup. Well, if you're going to do that, you sure as hell can't be trying to force feed Porzingis post ups and mid range shots.
Well, this is my thing. I've covered teams that have had this leadership committee before. And, you know, it's one of those things where the coach calls practice and the committee comes and like, listen, guys' legs are dead.
Yeah.
We need to take today off. Or they like, hey, if you let us stay in Denver or not Denver, if you let us stay in Phoenix an extra night here in 2 weeks, you know, we'll come in and do this there, you know, or, you know, that kind of stuff. Hey, how do you guys feel if we, you know, do this? As far as lineup changes, I mean, certainly maybe you consult the top player, certainly, but I don't know if you should be putting to a vote lineup changes.
Yeah, but you know what? I hear you. Also, like you said, the fact that Porzingis and Hardaway are there, like you're trying to create a team vibe. I get all that. Let's be honest, Luka. If Luka wants say on lineups, if he wants say on personnel, like he hadn't really thrown his weight around like he could, but he's going to have that say, and he should, and it would be bad coaching not to, make sure that the lines of communication are opened as wide as possible. Now, you know, X's and O's wise, I'm very befuddled by some of the things that they're trying to do. It's early, but they had going into the season. You know, it's funny. I talked about Porzingis being healthy and happy going into the season. Well, he's inefficient and injured. So, you know, not quite as great. And you know, they're 2-1, but it's not a very pretty 2-1. I would say they're going to have
tonight, so we don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, they play the Spurs tonight. No Porzingis. The leadership council. Like, I don't see any real. I think it's funny. I don't think it's a bad move by Kidd. I don't think there's any real, you know, any downside. I think, you know, making them feel like they have a voice was a smart move.
Just having Luka and KP working together on something, honestly, isn't a bad idea.
Again, when I look at the Mavericks, I'm much more concerned that it's pretty much the same personnel, you know, and I think that the changes they've made offensively are all bad changes.
Seems a little more important.
What does the leadership council think of you, McMahon? Let's have a vote on whether we're going to re-ban McMahon.
I think you would get a consensus in there.
Luka and KP maybe, but Hardaway, he seems like he would like.
Actually, you know what? KP is, as far as a media perspective, he's a treat to deal with. Super nice guy. KP might be my only vote. I think I get along with Hardaway fine. Luka.
Luka has veto power.
I don't know if Luka knows my name yet.
I'm sure he does.
Luka is, he's not a fan of the media. I say that.
Yeah. I spoke to him when he was a rookie. And I could tell he was just counting the minutes, seconds till he can get out of
there. Yeah, right.
All right. Well, so that's what we've seen early on here. And we'll see how it holds. We'll see how many of these come crashing down by the end of the weekend. But
by the way, I think we should have a leadership council on this podcast. Wendy, and I will be on the council, and we'll just tell Bontemps what we want him to do.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. All right. Well, Bontemps did have to help us with our expense reports. We're a little rusty in filing expense reports because we haven't been on the road, and Bontemps helped us with that. He's very proficient.
It's the most creative writing that he does.
Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. We will talk to you guys early next week.
Adios, amigos.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.